Trent Williams looked up from his desk when Gilbert stepped into his office.
Mr. Williams, there's a gentleman here to see you.
Who is it?
I don't know, sir. He didn't give his name, but he said that it had to do with some cow business. He said you'd understand.
Cow business? Very well. Show him in.
Williams leaned back in his chair, waiting, expecting to see Will Staley come through the door. It wasn't Staley.
Who are you?
Name's Cord. Trace Cord.
What can I do for you, Mr. Cord? My teller said it had something to do with cow business.
Yep.
What sort of cow business?
The kind of business you hired Will Staley for.
Oh, I see. So tell me, Mr. Cord, why didn't Mr. Staley come to discuss this?
He didn't come because he's dead.
Dead?
Yep. Him and five others.
What happened?
We ran into a hornet's nest, that's what happened.
Am I to understand that you did not get the hurt?
You ain't been listening to nothing I said, have you? No, we didn't get the herd. Damn lucky they didn't kill all of us.
I see. What am I to do now?
I don't care what you do now. All I care about is getting the money.
What money would that be?
The money Staley was supposed to pay us.
Why, Mr. Cord, you don't really think I'm going to pay you for your failure, do you?
There wasn't nothing said about failure. Only thing Staley said was that he would pay us to go with him. Besides, you set us up, you son of a bitch. You didn't tell us we was going to run into an army.
When I pay to have something done, how it is done is none of my business.
Yeah, well, that's just it. I went with him, and now I want my pay.
And if I refuse?
I'll go to the sheriff and tell him what you had planned.
You wouldn't do that. You'd be incriminating yourself.
Hell, I don't care nothing about that. I've been in prison for it. Won't bother me none to go back in. But a highfalutin fella like yourself, ooh, he'd have a real hard time in prison.
How much did Staley say he would pay you?
$500.
$500 is a lot of money.
Yep, but that's what he said he'd pay us.
Us?
Oh, I'd be splitting the money with the others.
I see. All right, I suppose what's right is right. I'll give you the money.
I thought you might see it my way.
Williams opened the middle drawer of his desk, reached his hand in, wrapped his fingers around the butt of a Colt 44, and then pulled the gun out.
What are you doing?
I will not be blackmailed. Mr. Gilbert! Mr. Gilbert, come in here quickly!
Gilbert, the teller, who had come in earlier, now came running into the room carrying a poker over his head. Williams was standing over Cord's body, holding a smoking pistol in his hand.
Mr. Williams, what happened, sir?
I don't know. This man came in here and threatened to hold up the bank. I tried to talk him out of it, but he was quite obdurate. Then it all happened so quickly. One minute I was arguing with him, and the next minute I was holding a smoking pistol and he was lying on the floor.
Yes. Well, don't worry, Mr. Williams. You did the right thing. A bank robber like that should be shot.
The sheriff's inquiry had been fast and non-threatening. Gilbert testified that Cord had come into the bank and presented himself in a belligerent manner, demanding to see Trent Williams. Gilbert further testified that he was worried about Mr. Williams and therefore kept a close eye on the door to the bank office. Then he heard Williams call out, heard a shot, and when he entered the office, he saw Cord lying on the floor and Williams standing over him holding a smoking gun. Trent Williams did not dissent from Gilbert's account. He explained that Cord had come into the office, demanding that Williams empty the safe and give him all the money.
Did he have a gun?
Yes.
Was the gun in his holster, or was he holding it in his hand?
I don't know.
Here now, Sheriff, what are you asking Mr. Williams all these questions for? We already told you what happened.
All right, Mr. Williams, you're free to go. There'll be no charges.
Thank you.
Williams told himself that shooting Cord had been necessary, but he was unnerved. He wasn't unnerved because he had had to shoot Cord. He was unnerved because Staley had failed to get the herd for him. Now what was he going to do? At this very moment, the answer to Williams' dilemma was just down the street from the bank, playing a game of solitaire in the saloon. The man was dressed all in black, including his hat, though the starkness was offset by the glitter of the silver and turquoise hatband. This was Quince Pardeen, and though he would have preferred a game of poker, nobody would play with him because everyone was afraid of him. Pardeen's reputation preceded him now, even in the smallest towns. Pardeen counted out three cards, but couldn't find a play. The second card of the three was a black seven. There would have been a play had the Black Seven come up on top, but unfortunately, it was one card down and therefore useless to him. Pardeen glared at it for a moment, then, with a shrug, played it anyway. The Batwing door swung open and a cowboy came in and walked over to the bar. He ordered a whiskey, then looked around and saw Pardeen sitting at the table, calmly playing cards.
Ain't you the one they call Pardeen?
Pardeen didn't answer.
Yeah, that's who you are, all right. You're Quince Pardeen. My name is Carl Logan. My brother's name was John Logan. I reckon you've heard that name.
Pardeen made no response.
John was a sheriff, an honest man whose only job was to protect the people of his town. But you shot him down in cold blood.
Finally, Pardeen looked up from his cards. The expression on his face was one of boredom, as if he shouldn't have had to deal with people like this belligerent cowboy.
You, talking to me, friend?
Mister, I am not your friend.
Oh, well, that's too bad. You see, I generally give my friends some leeway when they make a mistake, but seeing as you aren't my friend, then I don't see much need in cutting you any slack at all.
I ain't asking for any slack from you, you low-ass son of a bitch. I'm trying to get you riled enough to fight, because I aim to beat you to a pulp.
Well, if you got something sticking in your craw, cowboy, I think maybe you'd better just spit it out.
I done spit it out, I told you. I aim to beat you to a pulp, then I'm going to personally turn you over to the sheriff so you can get hung proper.
A fist fight? Did I hear you right? Are you challenging me to a fist fight?
Yeah.
Logan looked over at Corbett.
I know there's two of you and one of me, but I'd say that makes the odds about even. Come on. I think I'm going to enjoy this. Come on. I'm going to put the lights out for both of you.
If me and you are going to fight, mister, it's going to be permanent.
You mean a gunfight? No, I ain't going to get into no gunfight with the likes of you. Besides, like I said, there's two of you. I figure with the two of you, it might just about make a fist fight come out even.
You can keep me out of this one, mister. This is just between the two of you.
Corbett stood up and walked away, leaving the floor to the two players. Pardeen, in the meantime, stood up and stepped away from the table. He let his arm hang down alongside his pistol, and he looked at the cowboy through cold, ruthless eyes.
Well, what about him, Mr. Logan? You're the one that asked me to dance.
No, I told you. This ain't the kind of fight I'm talking about.
I'll let you draw first.
I told you I ain't drawing on you. But if you'd like to come over here and take your beating like a man, I'd be glad to oblige you.
I said draw.
And I told you I ain't gonna draw on you. You might have noticed that I'm not wearing a gun.
I'll give you time to get yourself healed.
I told you I ain't gonna get into no gunfight with you.
Somebody, give Mr. Logan a gun. He seems to have come to this fight unprepared.
I don't want a gun.
When no one offered Logan their gun, Pardeen pointed to a cowboy who was standing at the far end of the bar.
I see that you're wearing a gun. Give it to him.
Well, he don't want a gun. I ain't gonna do that. If I give him a gun, you'll kill him.
That's right.
Well, I don't want no part of it.
You got no choice, friend. You'll either give him your gun or you'd better be ready to use it yourself. Which will it be?
All right, if you put it that way, I reckon I'll do whatever you want.
He took his gun out of the holster and laid it on the bar. Oh.
Sorry, Logan.
Pick it up.
Logan looked at the pistol, but made no effort to pick it up. A line of perspiration beads broke out on his upper lip.
No, I ain't gonna do it.
For a moment, the entire saloon thought Pardeen had killed Logan, but that impression dissolved when they saw that Logan was still standing. He wasn't unscathed, though, for he was holding his hand to the side of his head with blood spilling through his fingers. Pardeen had shot off a piece of Logan's earlobe.
Pick up the gun.
No!
Logan's right earlobe, like his left, turned into a ragged, bloody piece of flesh.
Hey, mister, you better do something. Else old Quince here is going to carve you up like a Christmas turkey.
Pick it up.
No!
Are you left-handed or right-handed?
What?
Left or right?
Why you ask that?
I figure you're probably right-handed. Am I right?
Whether I'm right-handed or left-handed ain't none of your business.
Well, you better hope I'm right.
This time, the bullet took one of the fingers off Logan's left hand.
You're crazy!
Pick up the gun!
Logan stared at Pardeen through eyes that were wide with fear. Then the fear was replaced by blind rage. Logan reached for the pistol.
I'll send you to hell, you son of a bitch!
Hardeen played with Logan the way a cat would play with a mouse. He waited until Logan had the gun in hand before he drew again. The sound of the gunshots brought two or three outsiders into the saloon, including the sheriff. He saw Logan sitting down against the bar, his eyes open and sightless, his hand clenched tightly around the unfired pistol.
Oh, hell. You do this?
Yeah, I done it. But it was self-defense. Look at the gun in his hand. He was gonna shoot me.
Pardeen forced him into it, Sheriff. Logan didn't want to fight, but Pardeen egged him on.
Pardeen didn't have any choice, Sheriff.
The sheriff looked toward the sound of the voice and saw Trent Williams.
Mr. Williams, you're taking up for Pardeen?
Believe me, it's not something I want to do. But when Mr. Logan spoke to me earlier today, he let it be known that he intended to kill Quince Pardeen. I believe if Pardeen had not forced a showdown here, Logan would have shot him in the back.
Yeah, that's what I think too.
What do you got to say about this, Pardeen?
You heard the man, Sheriff. I didn't have no choice. If I hadn't killed him, he would have killed me.
I don't know if I believe you or not.
Oh, yeah. You believe me, all right. You believe me because you're afraid to go against me. Otherwise, you would have arrested me the moment I came into town.
No, I couldn't arrest you. I've heard about what you did back in Puxico, but I've received no paper on you, and I've got no authority.
Well, Sheriff, if you do get some paper on me and you want to come arrest me, you know where you can find me.
You just watch your step around here.
Pardeen saw Trent Williams staring at him. He walked over to talk to him.
Logan didn't really tell you he was going to kill me, did he?
No.
And why did you say that?
Williams looked around the saloon to see if anyone else was close enough to overhear their conversation. As everyone seemed to want to give Pardeen a very wide berth, there was nobody close by.
I spoke up for you because I want to hire your services.
No, I'm not interested.
You're not interested? Why not? You haven't even heard what I want you to do.
I know what you want me to do. You want me to kill someone? The answer is no. Kill him yourself.
You haven't heard my offer.
It would have to be a very good offer to get me to change my mind.
Is $10,000 good enough?
What? Did you say $10,000?
Yes.
I'll do it.
You haven't asked who it is I want you to kill.
I don't care who it is. For $10,000, I'd kill my own grandma.
The town was cold and dark when Williams, Pardeen, and Corbett arrived at around 1 in the morning. Tying their horses off behind the saloon, the three men moved up the alley toward the office of the Indian Agency.
He lives in a small shack behind the agency.
What about the other man? The one who's the actual agent?
Don't worry about him. He lives in Laramie.
I still don't know how killing this man is going to get us any money.
It's simple. Kirby Jensen.
Smoke Jensen.
All right. Smoke Jensen. He's bringing in 3,000 head of cattle. He will turn the cattle over to Malone in return for a receipt, which he can then redeem for cash from Abernathy. Only he isn't going to turn the cattle over to Malone. He's going to turn them over to me.
Because?
Because he's going to think that I am Cephas Malone.
Reaching the little building behind the Indian agency, Williams tried the front door.
I'll be damned. It isn't locked.
Yeah. A lot of people don't lock their doors in these little towns. They figure they know everyone in town, so they figure they're safe.
Williams started in, then stopped and stepped back out onto the porch.
What is it? What's wrong?
Don't make any noise. And tell me when it's done.
Pardeen disappeared into the darkened interior of the little house. Williams and Corbett waited outside.
Who's there? What is it? What are you doing in here?
A moment later, Pardeen came back outside.
Head's done.
Are you sure he's dead?
Oh, yeah. He's dead. I cut his throat from ear to ear.
Lock the door. By the time anyone discovers him, it will be too late.
Smoke's riders didn't see the town until they reached the top of a long, sloping ridgeline. Jules was riding point, so he was the first to see Sorrento, which was no more than a small group of buildings clustered around a railroad depot.
Yahoo! We're here! It's just over the hill! We're here! We're here! We're here!
It had been 28 days since Smoke and his outfit had left Sugarloaf. 28 days of drought, stampede, blizzard, and attacks from Indians and cattle rustlers. They'd come through, though not without its cost. Four good men lay dead on the trail behind them. Because they would be spending this night in town, Sally had not gone ahead of them this morning as she normally did. On this, the last day of the drive, she kept the wagon alongside the herd. Smoke stopped them when they reached the crest of the hill. They sat there for a moment, looking down at the little town below them.
Sure don't look like much. Coming all this way, only to see a town that ain't even as big as Big Rock seems sort of...
Anticlimactic?
Yeah, that.
Well, we didn't come here to visit the town. We came here to sell our cattle. And if we can do that, then it doesn't matter what size the town is.
You got that right. But the question now is, did we make it in time? Are we the first ones here?
We're the first ones here.
How do you know?
Look at the feeder lots. There aren't more than a couple of dozen cattle down there.
Could be they already been delivered to the Indians.
No. If there had been that many cattle in the pens, we would still be able to smell it. We're the first.
So, what do we do now, Smoke?
We'll keep the herd here while I go into town and contact Mr. Malone. Then, as soon as I make the arrangements, I'll pay you boys off. Then make arrangements for you and the horses to go back by train.
Woo-hee! Think about that, boy. We'll be going home on a train. I ain't never been on no train before. I wonder what that'll be like.
Why, shoot, it won't be like nothing. You just sit there on the train and ride along with it, that's all.
Sally, you want to come in town with me?
Not yet. Since we won't be taking the wagon back, I'll need to spend some time packing the things we will be shipping back home. But I tell you what, find us a hotel room while you're in town, would you? I wouldn't mind spending this night in a real bed.
Yeah, I could go along with that myself.
Smoke looked back at the others.
I can't tell you how proud I am of you. Not many men could do what you just did. Driving 3,000 head of cattle 500 miles in the wintertime.
The reason not many men could do it is because there ain't that many dumb enough to try.
I'll be back in a couple hours.
Smoke stepped into the Indian Agency office.
I'll be with you in just a moment.
No hurry. It's taken me a month to get here. I can wait a few more minutes, I reckon.
May I help you?
My name is Smoke Jensen. Are you Cephas Malone?
I am indeed, sir. Cephas Malone at your service.
Then you are the man I'm looking for. I'm here to sell my cattle. That is, assuming I'm the first.
You are the first.
Then I take it that you are still interested in buying. Otherwise, I've had a hell of a long drive for nothing.
Oh, yes, I'm quite willing to buy your herd. As soon as you put your cows in the holding pens, I will issue a receipt for payment. Then all you have to do is send the receipt to Washington, and they'll send you a bank draft for the amount.
I have to send the receipt to Washington for payment? I thought all I had to do was present the receipt to Mr. Abernathy.
No, Abernathy need not get involved. I'm the only one you'll have to deal with. That is, except for the Indian Bureau in Washington.
Yes, in Washington.
I can see that it's making you a little nervous to have to wait for your money. But if you can't depend on the United States government, who can you depend on?
I guess you're right. All right, I'll go bring in the herd. I have them just outside town.
Good. Believe me, Mr. Jensen, there are going to be a lot of happy Indians when these cattle are delivered.
Well, I hope so. A happy Indian is a peaceful Indian.
That's true, Mr. Jensen. Yes, sir, truer words were never spoken. I like that. I may use that next time I talk to bureaucrats in Washington. A happy Indian is a peaceful Indian.
You'll want the cattle delivered to the holding pens, I suppose?
Yes.
All right.
Wait, Mr. Jensen, don't you want the receipt?
Don't you want to count them first?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. I guess I was getting a little ahead of myself, wasn't I? Please, by all means, bring the cattle in. I'll count them, then I'll issue the receipt.
Smoke nodded, then left. Pardeen came out of the back room then.
So that was the great Smoke Jensen.
That is how he identified himself. I have no way of knowing for sure, since I've never met the man. But I have no reason to doubt that he is who he says he is, especially as he has delivered the herd.
Not yet he ain't delivered it.
Oh, he's delivered it all right. He just hasn't put them in the feeder pens for us.
Yeah, well, you'd better keep an eye on that one. He's as slick as they come.
No, it isn't my job to keep an eye on him. That's your job.
Oh, well, you don't worry about that. I have something special in mind for him just as soon as all this is over.
The town of Sorrento existed for the sole purpose of providing a railhead to ship out cattle for the neighboring ranches. Because of that, the facilities at the depot were equal to those of towns much bigger. Included in the facilities were two very large feeder lots, and Smoke used both of them. While Cal, Billy, Mike, and Jules pushed the cows into the two large pens, Pearlie and Smoke sat on the top rail of the pens, counting them. Smoke had one pen and Pearlie the other. They counted the cows by the simple method of making a knot in a string of rawhide for every 50 cows that passed through the gate, This controlled counting method allowed them to arrive at a much more accurate number than the hasty count that had been taken in the field after the attempted rustling.
I make it 1,342.
I have 1,411.
That's 2,753. I didn't think we'd lost that many.
Pearly, when you consider everything that we went through, I'm very pleasantly surprised we didn't lose more.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I reckon it's enough to make the drive worth it, don't you think?
Oh, yes. It's more than worth it. Especially considering that we might have as bad a winter as we did before. Here comes our man.
Smoke saw Trent Williams, the man he thought was Cephas Malone, coming toward him. Williams was carrying two pieces of paper.
Well, you got them counted, I see.
2,753.
2,753. All right, all I need you to do is sign this bill of sale over to me, and I'll get your receipt.
Smoke nodded, then signed the bill of sale. Williams handed him a receipt.
Send this into Washington, friend, and you'll be a rich man. And may I say that it was a pleasure doing business with you.
Thank you. Now I want to treat my cowboys to the best dinner in town. Where do you recommend I take them?
Oh, well, I wouldn't presume to recommend one place over another. But knowing cowboys, I imagine any place that would let them in would be a welcome change to men who are used to nothing but whorehouses and saloons.
I don't think of my cowboys in that way, mister. I consider them to be good men. In fact, I would go so far as to say that I consider them to be among the finest men I have ever met.
Well, certainly I meant no disrespect to either you or your men.
Sally came up to Smoke as Williams was walking away.
What's wrong?
Nothing's wrong. We have the receipt, but I'll tell you the truth. Sally, if it weren't for the money, that's a fella I'd just as soon avoid.
Well, after this, we can avoid him.
As it turned out, the hotel had a banquet room, and Smoke rented it for the evening. He ordered a dinner to be prepared for his men, and all showed up, freshly scrubbed and wearing their best clothes. As the wine was poured, Smoke lifted his glass to propose a toast.
Sally, men, I would like to drink a toast to the ones who didn't make it here with us, but who, by their effort and their sacrifice, enabled us to make it. Here's to Dooley, Andy, Hank, and Leroy.
Hear, hear.
All of them drank.
And I'd like to propose a toast to the man who led us.
And to the woman who led him.
Billy was standing in the cattleman's saloon when he looked up at the clock and saw that it was nearly midnight.
Whoa. I better get back to the hotel and go to bed. I'm catching a train out of here tomorrow.
Honey, you don't have to go all the way to the hotel just to get in bed.
I have to give you credit, Lucy. You are all business. But Mr. Jensen has gone to all the trouble to rent hotel rooms for us. It ain't that often I get to stay in a hotel, and I aim to take advantage of it.
You will buy me one more drink, though, won't you?
Damn right I will. In fact, I'll have one with you.
Billy tapped his finger on the empty glass, and when the bartender came to refill it, indicated that Lucy's glass should be refilled as well.
Go on. You were telling me about the cattle drive you were on.
Yes, ma'am. I was, wasn't I? Well, it was quite a trip up here, I tell you.
Oh, I think it would have been very frightening to have to face so many Injuns.
Well, I don't mind telling you that some of the boys was afraid. But I wasn't none afraid, no sir. And I helped Smoke buck up some of the others.
Smoke?
Smoke Jensen is his name. He was our trail boss. Well, he was more than that, because he actually owned the cows.
That's a funny name.
It may be a funny name, but he's about the best man I've ever known. Faster with a gun than greased lightning. But you never know it just to know him, because he's a fella that don't get riled any too easy. But you have to pity the fella that ever does get him riled.
I've heard of Smoke Jensen before.
The man was dressed all in black, including his hat, though the starkness was offset by the glitter of the silver and turquoise hatband. He continued to stare into his glass as he spoke.
You've heard of him, have you, mister? Well, then you can verify what I'm saying about the type of man he is.
Well, I'll tell you what I know about him. I know him to be a lying, back-shooting coward.
What did you say, mister?
You heard what I said. I said that Smoke Jensen is a yellow-bellied lying coward.
Mister, maybe you don't know this, but Smoke Jensen is a friend of mine, and I'll be asking you to take that back.
And if I don't?
If you don't, you'll be answering to me.
Are you challenging me to a gunfight, boy?
Well, no, not that. I was thinking more along the lines of wiping up this here saloon floor with your hide. I mean, you spoke some harsh and even rude words, but I'm not ready to get into a gunfight over it.
Mister, it's too late for you to back out now. You're the one who invited me to this ball. Now, either dance with me or admit that you are a yellow-bellied lion coward, just like your friend, Smoke Jensen.
Hardeen, the boy's been drinking. Ease up on him.
You stay out of this, whore.
Hardeen? Did she call you Pardeen?
Yeah, she called me Pardeen, because that's my name. You got a problem with my name, boy?
No, it's not that. It's just that, well, maybe we got off on the wrong foot. Why don't we just both forget about some of the things we've said and go back to drinking in peace?
Too late for that, boy. You should have thought of that before you called me out.
I didn't exactly call you out. I just said that you would have to answer to me.
I'm going to count to three. And when I get to three, I'm going to kill you. So I expect you'd better draw your gun.
No, I...
One.
Look, I don't want to do this.
Two.
Suddenly, Billy made a desperate grab for his pistol. He had the gun out and was coming up with it before Pardeen even started his draw. For just a second, Billy actually thought that he might have a chance, and he felt a surge of hope. Pardeen had drawn and fired so quickly that by the time Billy realized Pardeen had the gun in his hand, he had already been shot. Even as Smoke was waking up, he was drawing his pistol from the holster that hung over the bedstead. He motioned for Sally to get out of bed and get into the corner.
Yeah? Who is it?
It's Jensen, I'm the sheriff. I need to talk to you.
What about?
You have a man working for you by the name of Billy Cantrell?
Smiling, Smoke lowered his gun. He opened the door.
What kind of trouble has Billy got himself into? Barroom fight?
No, sir. I'm sorry to have to tell you this, Mr. Jensen, but Billy Cantrell's dead.
What? Are you serious?
Yes, sir. Got into a gunfight with a man by the name of Quince Pardeen. Pardeen killed him.
Did you say Quince Pardeen?
Yes, sir. You know him?
I've never met him, but I know who he is.
Well, sir, then you know he's what they call a gunfighter. Too bad your man Cantrell didn't know that. If he had known that, he might not have started the fight.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that Billy started a fight with Pardeen?
Yes, sir. That's what everybody in the saloon said. He was near all of them witnesses. They all said that Cantrell called Pardeen out.
Billy might have challenged him to a fist fight. He had a habit of doing that. But he would never have challenged anyone to a gunfight, let alone someone like Pardeen.
Yes, sir. That don't seem to make no sense to me, neither. But like I said, everyone who witnessed the fight says that's exactly what happened.
Where's Billy now?
He's down to the Welch mortuary. You can see him first thing in the morning if you like.
Yes, I'd like to. Thank you. It's me Pardeen is after. He killed Billy to get to me.
You don't know that.
Yes, Sally. The sad truth is I do know it.
The next morning, Smoke, Sally, Pearlie, Cal, Mike, and Jules were waiting outside the mortuary when Welch turned the sign from closed to open.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
You have our friend's body here. We'd like to see him.
Well, sir, I haven't prepared the body for viewing yet.
I don't care whether it's prepared for viewing or not. I want to see him.
Very good, sir. As long as you know that the remains are in a distressed state.
Where is he?
He is right in here, sir.
Smoke and the others followed Welch into the back room of the building where they saw not one, but two bodies.
Was someone else killed last night? I thought Billy was the only one killed in the shootout.
Oh, no. That is Mr. Malone. The poor fellow was found murdered in his bed yesterday morning.
Malone?
Yes. Cephas Malone. Did you know him?
Are you saying this is Cephas Malone?
Yes.
The Indian agent Cephas Malone?
Yes, do you know him?
And he was killed yesterday morning?
Apparently night before last. As I said, he was discovered yesterday morning. Someone broke into his house and cut his throat. The sheriff thinks it was robbery. It is frightening to think that we would have such a person in our small town.
Smoke, that's not...
The man we gave our cattle to.
At that very moment, the man Smoke did give his cattle to was standing down at the feeder lot, addressing the 10 men Pardeen and rounded up for him.
$100. $100 to every man who helps me drive these cattle to the Indian Agency in Laramie.
Mister, am I hearing you right? All we have to do is drive these cows no more than 10 miles, and you're giving us $100?
That's right.
What's the catch?
No catch.
You say there's no catch, but when Paul Dean hired us, he asked us if we were willing to use our guns. Now, he wouldn't ask that if he didn't think there was a chance we'd have to use them.
It's not a catch, exactly. It's more like a complication.
All right. What is the complication?
There may be some who don't want us to do this. They may try and stop us. I don't intend to be stopped.
Then if you have a problem with that, walk away now, because when the shooting starts, I'll kill anyone who tries to run away.
You say some people may try to stop us. How many people are you talking about?
Well, one less than they started out with. I killed one of them last night.
That was the fella in the saloon?
Yeah.
I seen that happen. I was wondering why he was bracing them so. Now I guess I know why.
There's only six of them. And that's counting both Jensen and his wife.
Jensen? That wouldn't be a fella they call Smoke Jensen, would it?
Yeah, you don't be worrying about that. I'll take care of Mr. Smoke Jensen and his wife.
So what you're saying is, while you're taking care of Jensen, we're to take care of the rest?
Yeah. That would be nine of you and four of them.
For $100?
Yes.
Yeah. Sounds like easy money to me.
Leaving the Undertaker's establishment, Smoke, Sally, Pearly, Cal, Mike, and Jules walked down to the sheriff's office to find out what they could do about the murder of Billy Cantrell and to report the theft of their herd. Sheriff Dawson met them outside on the boardwalk.
What can I do for you?
Well, to start with, you can arrest the man who killed Billy Cantrell. Then you can serve a warrant on the man who killed Cephas Malone and stole my cattle.
Well, hold on there. What do you mean the man who killed Cephas Malone? How do you know who killed Cephas Malone?
I know because yesterday I sold my cattle to a man who claimed to be Cephas Malone. Obviously, he wasn't Malone since Malone was already dead.
His name is Trent Williams.
What? You already know about this?
You talking about the man whose cattle are in the feeder lot right now?
Yes, only they aren't his cows. They're my cows.
Well, seems to me like that is a civil dispute. I don't get involved in civil disputes.
You call murder a civil dispute?
Murder? Well, now that's a serious accusation. You have no proof of that, though I admit it does look suspicious.
Suspicious? Sheriff, how much evidence do you need? I have a receipt signed by a man who claims to be Cephas Malone. Only it turns out that he isn't Cephas Malone. That can only mean that he murdered Cephas Malone in order to get control of my cattle. I also think it is suspicious that Quince Pardeen, the man who murdered Billy Cantrell, has been seen down at the feeder lot this morning.
Titus and I both talked to the eyewitnesses. They all said that your man drew first.
Are you serious? Billy was forced into it. I talked to those same witnesses, Sheriff, and they said that Pardeen told Billy he was going to kill him at the count of three. Then he began counting.
That was just a bluff. If your man had not drawn his pistol and then Pardeen killed him, it would have been murder.
And Billy would have still been dead.
Yes, well, the fact is, your man did draw first. And as long as all the witnesses swear to what they saw, no charges can be made.
And what about the fact that Pardeen and whoever he is about to steal my cattle?
Maybe you don't know it, mister, but there are 10 men down there in addition to Pardeen. I've got only one deputy.
So you have looked into it. You do know that Williams is down there with my cattle.
Yeah, I looked into it. Like I said, it is suspicious, but I have no proof that anything illegal has happened.
And you aren't going to get proof, unless you go down there and ask a few questions.
There's a lot you don't seem to know, mister. The men down there aren't just cowboys. They're a bad lot, all of them. More than half of them have been in jail at one time or another for robbery, assault, you name it.
They aren't regular cowboys.
No.
Then that is more evidence, isn't it? Sheriff, they're stealing my herd right before your eyes.
Well, what do you want me to do about it? I told you, there's just me and Titus.
Deputize us. We'll take care of the situation ourselves.
I don't know that I can do that.
Of course you can do it. In fact, I'm already a deputy back in Big Rock. All you have to do is grant me a professional courtesy as a visiting lawman. It's done all the time.
All right, you're deputized. Do what you feel must be done, but don't count on any help from either me or my deputy.
At this point, Sheriff, you and your deputy would just get in our way.
Jared McHenry came back to the feeder lot to report to Williams and Pardeen on what he had just learned.
The sheriff has deputized Smoke Jensen and the others.
Well, now, this is getting interesting.
They were holding the conversation just outside the fence of the feeder lot, and the air was redolent with the pungent smell of manure. Nearby was a stable where a half dozen buckboards and wagons were parked and waiting to be rented.
We about to have us a shootout, ain't we?
Well, I sure as hell hope so.
What do you mean, hope so?
The stage has been set for me and Smoke Jensen to have us a meeting for a long time now. And this is as good a time and place as any.
Well, I don't mind telling you boys, this isn't what I wanted. But I'm afraid the fat is in the fire now.
We gonna stand around and talk all day? We're going to get this thing done.
You're anxious, are you?
Some. If we're going to do this, let's get it done.
The men started toward town, and some of the others began to follow.
Wait, didn't you say they were coming to us?
Yeah, that's what it sounded like.
Then let's make them come to us. That way we'll have the advantage, and when it's over, there will be no question about it being murder.
Yeah, good idea. Hey, you.
Pardeen called to the man who was working the wagon wheel. The man looked over toward Pardeen.
You talking to me?
Yeah, you, come here.
Responding to the call, the man got up and walked over toward them, wiping his hands with a rag he carried in his back pocket.
What's your name?
Name is Cooksey. I own this place. You need to board your horse or rent a horse or a wagon?
Nah, we need you to do something for us.
What's going on here? What are you men about to do?
Well, we're about to conduct a prayer meeting.
What?
Never you mind what we're about to do. You just go on down to the sheriff's office and tell them new deputies he just swore in that we're down here waiting for them.
You're about to get into a gunfight here, aren't you?
That's right.
You boys don't really want to do this.
Yeah, we do. Now you go down there and get them like we said. Then you stay the hell out of the way.
Smoke and the others were still standing in front of the sheriff's office discussing the best way to deal with the situation at hand when Cooksey came up to them.
Is the sheriff and his new deputies in the office?
We're his new deputies.
Well, you ain't wearing no stars.
We don't need any stars. But if you doubt we're deputies, you can check with the sheriff. He's just inside.
No, that's all right. Now that I think about it, I reckon you're the ones they was talking about anyway. They said the new deputies.
Who said it?
Well, the only ones I know are Jared McHenry, Abner Coleman, Wizard McGee, Lou Smith, and the Parker brothers, and maybe three or four more of them.
What about them?
Well, sir, I don't rightly know what this is all about, but they said to tell you that they are all down at the feeder lot waiting for you.
Are they now?
Yes, sir. That fella Pardeen, he's waiting too.
Pardeen too? Well, what you know, Smoke? We must have been living right. Christmas is coming early this year.
Pardeen belongs to me.
Dead is dead. The son of a bitch killed Billy, so I don't care who kills him, as long as he's dead.
Sorry about using them words like that, Miss Sally.
No need to apologize, Mike. Pardeen is a son of a bitch.
Stay off!
Then the five men and a woman walked resolutely toward this rendezvous with destiny. Sheriff Dawson suddenly appeared, stepping out into the street. He held his hand up to stop Smoke and the others.
Stop right there. I don't intend to have a bloodbath in my town.
You want to go down there and arrest them, Sheriff?
No. You folks are on your own now. I wash my hands of it.
Why not? It worked for Pontius Pilate.
As Smoke, Sally, Pearlie, Cal, Mike, and Jules approached, Williams, Pardeen, and the others stepped out of the livery barn and stood facing them. The two groups stood no more than 10 feet apart. Williams, Pardeen, McHenry, and the others were now boxed in, for the feeder lot was behind them, the livery barn on one side and a house on the other. Smoke, Sally, Pearlie, Cal, Mike, and Jules were standing out in the open, close to the street. There was a moment of silence as the two parties confronted each other.
Williams! This doesn't have to happen. You and your men lay down your guns on the ground, then walk away and leave my cattle here, and this will be over.
It has to happen. Yes, sir, it has to happen.
Pardeen! You aren't part of this offer. I was talking to Williams. You killed Billy, so I'm gonna kill you. No matter what Williams does.
The smile left Pardeen's face. Then he made the first move, reaching for and pulling his .45 so fast that to some of the bystanders, it appeared as if he'd been holding the gun all along.
No!
Williams took a couple of hesitant steps backward.
No! No, wait! We'll be killed!
Williams turned and ran through the open door of the barn behind them.
No, don't shoot us! Don't shoot us!
Williams, you lily-livered coward!
Although Pardeen had drawn first, the first shot came from Smoke's gun. Even as Pardeen went down, McGee shot at Smoke but missed. Sally shot McGee, hitting him in the chest.
Smith fired at Mike as Curly fired at Coleman, hitting him between the eyes. After that, guns began to roar in rapid succession. Both Parkers went down, then three other gunmen, leaving only Smith and McHenry. Smoke killed Smith, while a bullet from Cal's pistol tore through McHenry's right hand. Another hit him in the chest. McHenry staggered back against a window of the vacant house, then slid slowly to the ground. He switched his pistol to his left hand. Sitting there on the ground, with his legs crossed and resting his pistol on his shattered arm, he shot with his left hand. His bullet hit Sally in the arm, spinning her around. Smoke shot McHenry again, this time in the forehead. Sally!
Are you all right?
Oh, yes, it's not much more than a nick.
Suddenly, out of the corner of her eye, Sally saw Williams reappear in the door of the barn, holding a rifle. Mike went down. Smoke, Pearly, and Cal all fired at the same time, and their bullets slammed into Williams' chest. Williams grabbed onto the post that supported the roof over the boot repair shop. Then he fell back dead in the dirt. Of all those involved in the fight, not one of the gunmen with Williams was left alive. Smoke, Pearly, Cal, and Jules were unscathed. Sally had a bullet in her arm, and Mike was dead.
Mike! Oh, Smoke, they got Mike.
Smoke went over to look down at the young man, then shook his head sadly. Two days later, Smoke, Sally, Pearly, Cal, and Jules were standing on the platform at the depot, waiting for the train that would take them back home. Sally had been treated by a doctor, and her arm was in a sling. The bodies of Mike and Billy were in coffins and would be put in the baggage car of the same train. The cattle were gone, and Smoke had a certified bank draft for $97,250, the amount he and Colin Abernathy agreed upon after Abernathy came personally to take delivery of the cattle.
Here it comes.
Are you anxious to get home, Jules?
Yes, ma'am. I'll be glad to give this money to Ma and Pa. Plus, this here will be the first time I ever rode on a train. It's the first time either Billy or Mike ever rode a train, too. They was really looking forward to it.
Sheriff Dawson came up to them then.
Thought you might like to know that an inquest was held and it was found that the shooting and killing was all justified.
Smoke just nodded.
And you'll be going home with almost $100,000. Reckon this is one trip you'll be glad you made.
Oh, yeah. I'm just all broke with joy.
You don't sound all that happy.
Mike, Billy, Hank, Andy, Leroy, and Dooley.
I don't understand.
No, you wouldn't.
The train pulled into the station then.
Come on, Sally. Let's go home.
Smoke Jensen, the Mountain Man number 35, Rampage of the Mountain Man, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2007, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by James Lewis, Elizabeth Jernigan, Nanette Savard, Drew Copus, Thomas Keegan, Christopher Sheeran, Tim Getman, Richard Rowan, Nick DePinto, David Coyne, Thomas Penny, Joe Brack, MJ Casey, Eric Messner, Ken Jackson, Alexander Strain, Terrence Aselford, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, Kimberly Gilbert, Dylan Lynch, and Bradley Smith. Directed by Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing, graphic audio sound design, and the Smoke Jensen theme music by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed Rampage of the Mountain Man, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com And be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The First Mountain Man, The Last Mountain Man, Blood Bond, The Last Gunfighter, Eagles and Sidewinder series, as well as Elmer Kelton's Texas Ranger series. All available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. In the beginning, the Lord created the earth. Then he rested. In time, the earth became cracked and scarred. And through those cracks rose darkness and shadow and unspeakable evil. The evil spread, and sickness and plague and war and death followed with it. Slowly, hope was lost, and darkness threatened to overwhelm. But then, God sent his angels. The Holy Order of the Knights Templar, and at the head of the Legion, Knight Commander Cade Williams. And all the power of heaven followed with him.
Run. Run while you can. One day I will find you, and on that day, there will be a reckoning.
Prepare yourself for a reckoning in the Templar Chronicles, Book 1, The Heretic. Available now in graphic audio.
A reckoning indeed.
I'm not in the mood for jokes, Creed. I'm just lucky you missed the booby traps.
Booby traps? Now you're scaring me. What, a tripwire? Explosives?
Explosives. Been there, done that. Got the t-shirt.
I was invited here.
By whom?
I'm gathering research for a television program. But I'm not the BBC, so chill.
Research on fairies, right? Go scamper about the woods, why don't you? And leave us to our work here.
And what exactly is that work? You've got something to hide. Is it two bodies?
Man holding a gun here. Why is it you're not afraid?
Afraid? A charging mountain lion would invoke my fear. Terrorists wielding C-14 makes me afraid. A thug with a gun? Been there, done that. Shredded the t-shirt.
Who the bloody hell are you? You're Starkers, you are!
You don't even know who you're following? I get to ask the questions. Who sent you?
I don't rightly know. I didn't get a name.
Liar.
I'm a feckin' freelancer. What's the blade, will you love? I think you killed me, partner.
He's not dead. He passed out from the pain. Pain, I promise you, if you don't start talking. Now, you'll have me believe you don't know the name of the guy signing your paycheck?
It's all cash now, isn't it?
What was the order?
To follow the American woman and make sure she gets out of town. Oh, get out of town, love.
You first.
I'm hot on their trail. There's something out there. I know I found them. But who or what are they? It's very close. Whatever it is. I feel like the temperature has dropped a few degrees. That's what happens when ghosts are around, right? Hell, I don't want to see a ghost. There are no ghosts. Chill, Kritz. It was a stupid bird. The owl.
No! Help! 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 Help!
God, I love a woman who can fight. Really turns me on.
Where is Eric?
You don't get to talk.
Miss Creed can keep her mouth shut.
Shut up! We're going for a ride, the three of us. I'm tired of you shadowing me, Slater. I should have done this days ago.
Don't hurt Eric. He's an innocent.
Like you are innocent of snooping and putting yourself in my way? You know too much about our operation, as does your friend.
He's just a kid. If you don't go to jail for arms dealing, then kidnapping and murder tend to alter a man's choice of Armani to Prison Orange.
I'll take that into consideration. See you around, Miss Creed. Mr. Slater?
Don't panic.
Hold your breath.
Rogue Angel 30, The Other Crowd.
Available now in graphic audio.
Graphic Audio presents Peter V. Brett's fantasy masterpiece, The Demon Cycle. Book 1, The Warded Man. Experience a world filled with hardship and pain. By day, humanity struggles to carve out an existence in a land that wants nothing more than to see it fall. By night, the broken rabble cowers behind magical wards, its only protection from the relentless bloodthirst of the demon plague. But just as the light threatens to fade away forever, and shadow is poised to shroud all in its wake, three survivors will band together to do battle with the savage horde. Led by a mysterious, fearsome warrior known only as the Warded Man, humanity will wage a bloody war against the creatures of the night. A war that could bring it to the very brink of destruction, or capture its final salvation. Don't miss the savage action of The Warded Man, Parts 1 and 2. Coming soon in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.